time to not heal all wounds. Not when a mother is without her son, and a one-year-old boy is without a father. Not when a young man's life ends by his own hand after fighting a losing battle with post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm Jabulani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we revisit Lori Turner, the mother of the late military specialist Jacob Andrews. She was on the program last year, just mere months after her son took his own life.
And he was very shaken, and imagine me trying to comfort him, you know, when he's clear in Afghanistan. So I just tried the best I could.
Now, a year later, we talk about our mission to honor the late Kansas City soldier. Plus, we hear more about his moving story. That's coming up on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. As Americans, we've known about the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq for a combined 20 years of our lives. Most of us support the troops in spirit, but the battlefield is as far from our minds as on a daily basis as those war-torn countries are geographically. However, for some of us, the war is closer to home than we'd like it to be. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabulani LaFall. And joining us now is Lori Turner, whose son Jacob Andrews, a military serviceman, took his own life last year after he returned from a life at war and psychological issues, a traumatic head injury, and wrangling with the Army and the Veterans Administration for benefits made it too hard to cope back at home in the States. Lori Turner, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Before we get into our conversation with Lori Turner, let's go back to a little over a year ago when Lori Turner first appeared on our program in June 2011, just months after Jacob's tragic death. She was joined then by Bill Murphy Jr., a reporter for Stars and Stripes newspaper, who called me in the middle of the night to propose this story. At the time, Bill Murphy was covering the growth of American military suicides. Let's hear a clip from that program.
I think the grimmest statistic is the sheer number of veterans and military members who have taken their own lives in recent years. The VA, a couple of years ago, came out with their own number that suggested 18 veterans every single day take their own lives. That's not attempts. That's actual successful suicides.
And where did you find Jacob Andrews' mother, Lori, in your research, Bill?
Well, you know, I knew nothing about Jacob's suicide or what had happened to him. I was actually reporting a completely different story about a battle in Afghanistan that I had thought incorrectly that Jacob had been at. His unit was in it, but he was not there that day. And I had tracked down Lori Turner simply to try and track down her son and say, hey, if he's out of the Army, if he's still in the Army, if you'd like to talk about what happened that day, I'd love to hear. And unfortunately, I happened to be reaching out to Lori, I believe, 2 or 3 days after Jacob had taken his own life.
Lori, describe the day you got the call from Bill and what his response was.
Well, actually, I got an email, and we corresponded by email for a little bit until after things kind of settled down, and then we began to talk. I kind of look at it as a godsend. I don't know. I think our paths were crossed for a reason, and that's to tell the story, not only for my son, but also for those that are going to come after him.
Bill, what was your response to the Jacob Andrews story, and when did you realize this is actually the story, not some battle in Afghanistan?
Well, I think my first reaction, of course, is simply sympathy and just wanting to express my own condolences. And but you know, I think if you're a reporter, you're drawn to meet interesting people and listen to their stories. And this is a tragic story, but it's certainly a very interesting one. And as Lori and I talked some more, and I talked with some of, I did continue to report that other story about the battle. So I got to know some of his Army buddies and asked them, you know, tell me about Jacob Andrews and what happened there.
What advice do you have to families and mothers just like yourself?
My advice would be, first off, I'd like to say the system is going to be flooded with these men and women. So they better get ready. And for the parents and the families out there, if you feel something is wrong, don't ignore it. I mean, I struggled with not wanting to make Jake mad at me and then let him get mad at you. Because had I not followed through and made him go to the VA, you know, this would not have a name. His illness or injury, whichever everyone would call it, would not have a name. I tried to do everything I could for him, and I would have done anything I could have for him. So just keep him close, love him, and watch out for those warning signs and get him the help.
That was Lori Turner, the mother of the late KC military veteran Jacob Andrews. The other voice was reporter Bill Murphy, Jr. of Stars and Stripes newspaper. That clip came from their appearance on Central Standard in June 2011, and we welcome back live to the studio Lori Turner. Lori, how have you held things together since we last talked to you?
I've been able to hold things together. I can honestly tell you, there's times I don't hold it together, but through the avenues have been given me, speaking out, telling our story, speaking at conferences, appearing on this radio show, podcast, it's healing to me. I don't know where I would be today if I was not given the avenues that I have been given to speak about what's happened to our family. Me and Ashley kind of make a joke. Our tagline is, at least we're not curled up in a ball. So just speaking about it, it's not always easy. There's days I don't want to speak about it, but when I want to and can, I do.
You mentioned Ashley. That's the mother of Jacob Andrews' son, Jake, who, due to these circumstances, he never actually got to meet.
Correct.
How is Jacob's little boy, Jake? Oh. Tell us about him.
Oh, my gosh. He's a spitting image of his dad, and he's just honoring. And I just got back from spending 2 weeks with them, and I miss waking up in the morning, and he's in my face with those little two teeth shining, you know. And he's doing really well. Ashley's an excellent mother, and, you know, I can't imagine how it would be if I didn't have that peace in my son to have. All my grandkids are great, though, and we're too far away from each other is the worst thing.
Have you gotten anywhere with the Veterans Administration or the Army's? We know that the frustrations over benefits and the frustrations over feeling out of place and isolated after Jacob returned home were the conditions that were ripe for him taking his own life. Where have you gotten since then?
I was able to take over his POA on the claims he had filed for his injuries, his post-traumatic stress, the traumatic brain injury, neck, back, ankle, knee, you know. We got a disability rating of 80%, and his death was ruled service-connected, which is certainly, you know, helpful when trying to secure benefits for little Jake. I just don't know. You know, I've started working with Congressman Gray's office, and I feel like I get a quicker response with going through them. I do have an issue still with four times we've requested his medical records in his 201 personnel file. And each time I get it and there is 2.5 years missing of his record, I have his enlistment papers from MEPS here in Kansas City. And I have paperwork showing disciplinary action, you know, that eventually got him out of the Army and his separation. There's nothing in there from his time at Fort Benning for basic, nothing about his time at Fort Drum prior to deployment, and nothing from deployment. And this has been taken to the Pentagon and the Department of Defense, and we're told those records are just missing, which is difficult for me to believe, but also seeing how the system kind of runs is kind of easy to believe on the other hand. So I've met obstacles, but I've also, you know, had some victories. So
Just to get a sense of what Jacob Andrews went through when he was over there, what was the process like when he gave you, as you said, a number? He finally confided with you that he had killed six people over there.
Yeah, that was on one of our many nights, you know, when he would come in and wiggle my big toe and ask me to come in and sit with him. And sometimes we'd talk, you know, and boy, when he's talking, he just, you know, would talk and talk. And sometimes we just didn't say anything. He just needed me to sit with him. And I don't remember how the conversation came up, but he gave me a number of six. And he said, at the time, you know, I asked him, I says, well, how do you feel about that? And he says, at the time, you know, it's, you don't have a choice. It's you or them, or your buddies or them. But when you go lay in your bunk that night, you know, those were human beings and they had families. And he felt like, who was he to play God, to be taking someone else's life? So he definitely had a struggle with the fact, you know, of carrying out the mission and the humanity side of it as well. He was tortured by it, if you want to know the truth.
That's a heck of a load for someone in their early 20s to carry. Has talking to other military families helped your healing process at all?
Oh, absolutely. I've been fortunate. I spoke at a conference up in Tacoma, Washington, and met some wonderful people. And we stay in contact via email and just kind of let each other know, you know, victories or obstacles that we've met. And we are just trying to support each other, you know. It's so funny how you can meet somebody and spend 10, 15 minutes with them, but you have that connection with them, and it's just something that you can't explain. It's just a connection, and you understand each other's pain and know that that's not ever going to completely go away. And so you have to find the best way you can to deal with that. And so speaking with other families has definitely been a good thing. You know, I've done some other things too, but you know, speaking of that conference was one thing for me. That was the very first time I stood up in front of a group and spoke. And although it was very nerve-wracking, I think it helped me tremendously.
What did you say when you spoke to the group?
Well, I kind of talked about Jake as a kid growing up and, you know, how different dates and times in your life define who you are and who you become, and you know, about April 5th, 2011, it was definitely a turning point in my life.
That's the date he died.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I believe it was June 26th of 2009 was the day that his buddy Peter Cross tumbled down the mountain in a Humvee and was killed. And I spoke to his mother, and, you know, Jake was very affected by that. He was the first one on site. He actually tumbled down the mountain because he was running, trying to get to him. And so speaking to his mother, you know, that was a turning point for Jake in his life. Speaking to the soldiers at Fort Drum, I just got back from there. I actually spoke with one of the young men that was there when that happened, and he said that was the first time he'd seen Jacob cry. And their lives, that family's lives, changed tremendously on that date, but we didn't know how that date had changed our lives until April 5th of 2011.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Lori Turner, whose son, Jacob, a military serviceman, took his own life last year, April of 2011, if you just heard, after he returned from a life at war and found it hard to cope back in the States. Kansas City, what are your concerns about this generation of military vets? the Jacob Andrews of the world. What are your concerns about people coming home from war-torn existence and combat? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your thoughts, concerns, and stories to centralstandard@kcur.org. We want to hear your stories, too. There are a lot of aggrieved parents and relatives of veterans and people who are still over there that might want to chime in today on a very touching subject and also a very timely subject. Now, Jacob also had traumatic head injury.
Correct.
Had a physical injury in addition to his psychological issues, in addition to having to cope with the war situation, in addition to seeing his buddies lose their lives.
Correct.
He suffered an actual physical injury.
Yeah, traumatic brain injury, which went undiagnosed or treated until he came home to me and I made him get to the VA within 5 days of his discharge. I don't know at what point that it occurred, but I do know he had a huge knot on the back of his head behind his ear. And in one of the papers that I have like a follow-up, you know, like he'd been seen, he'd been ordered to have a traumatic brain injury follow-up 10 days prior to the day they discharged him. So they certainly had reason to believe that he had traumatic brain injury, but he never got the treatment that he needed because within 10 days or a month, he was booted out.
You talked about being in Fort Drum, New York. That's one of the highlights of the past year, which has been a very harrowing year for you. You recently received Jacob's Combat Infantry Badge, his CIB, at Fort Drum in New York. What was that process like? You have a smaller version of it on your shirt right now.
Yes.
How was that process?
It was very nerve-wracking thinking about going into it. I didn't know how I was going to be greeted. This technically was the first time that the Army had even acknowledged me, had acknowledged our family, had acknowledged that Jake had existed, and acknowledged that Jake had passed away, and acknowledged that he served his country. The chain of command that's there now is not the chain of command that was there then. I feel like I was met with people that were very genuine, and Colonel Whitehurst is the one that pinned Jake's CIB on me that will go on his Class A's. He also pinned one on little Jake. And it was very touching. And he even took the time to, you know, visit with me for 15, 20 minutes and talk to me on a human level. And I know I saw him trying to fight back tears. I'm not the first mother he's had to speak to.
Up until that ceremony that you just described, a very emotional ceremony of the colonel pinning the combat infantry badge on you and on Jacob's son, little Jake, he was the only soldier in his platoon who wasn't awarded that badge. All of his unit's mates insisted he earned it.
Yes.
But it wasn't until early August that he was awarded that badge. How does it feel to get closure on that front?
This was a very sore point for Jake. One of the many things he talked to about, you know, he didn't understand why he was the only one not to receive it. I feel like, you know, let me first say that in Jake's deployment, I think that the chain of command changed like 3 times. So the people that the commander that he was originally with, which he was a driver for, they had a good rapport with each other. But as we all know, you know, in work settings and life settings, there's going to be personality conflicts with other people. And I'm not going to sit here and name names, but I know if that person's listening right now, he knows who I'm talking about. But it was a very sore point. He didn't understand. He didn't feel like what he did counted, that it mattered. And, you know, of course, none of this would have happened if Lieutenant Colonel Andrew DeKeever, he's, you know, I would never begin to know how, who to push the paperwork through or anything like that. But he's the one that actually spearheaded this, and is also spearheading the Purple Heart. Traumatic brain injury is Purple Heart worthy, and his death has been World Service connected.
We'll learn about Lieutenant Colonel McKeever's involvement in a few moments here. But meantime, Kansas City, what are your concerns about this generation of military vets? What are your concerns about what these veterans will be facing when they come home, and what soldiers are still facing over there? If you're a family member of a soldier or a friend of a soldier, give us your story. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your thoughts to centralstandard@kcur.org. We have Heather in Gardner, Kansas. Welcome to Central Standard, Heather.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I am actually originally from right outside of Nashville, Tennessee, a place called Clarksville, and it's connected to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, which is where the 101st is. And I grew up there, and I can tell you now, my brother-in-law is Army, and he's about to be deployed for the fifth time in 7.5 years.
Wow.
And, yeah, and I can tell you, with so few Americans serving now, and so few of them involved in the military, especially around here, that at least where I am in Johnson County, that when they come back, it's so isolating for them. People can't relate. It's like it didn't even happen here. And so their struggles are like compounded by the fact that it's like, you know, for us, it's like people who didn't serve, it didn't happen. We don't understand what they're going through. They just came from a completely different world, and their reality is so different that it compounds, you know, the stress of being there. And then the transition getting back here is so hard. Like, people will stop them and say, I know that, you know, when I go home, you're constantly surrounded by, you know, people who've returned and who've been there several times. And people that have not served will say, thank you for your service. But a lot of times that just comes across as just, you know, just not even sincere, because they don't have a clue. And I can tell you, as a family member of watching friends, tons of my friends and family members deploy over and over and over again, the stress that they're under when they're there, the stress that their families are under, will break you. And I think most of the problems that we're seeing is from the fact that we have so few serving and multiple deployments, and then not having the VA isn't set up for the transition back. There just isn't enough support for people when they come back. And so I feel so genuinely for your guest, and I hope that she can find some peace and that she gets what she needs for her grandson. I'll take my answer off there. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Do you have any reaction to this, Lori? When veterans come home, they're totally isolated. People talk all the time about the sympathy and supporting the troops, but they have no idea, no clue, really.
No, they don't. I think she hits the nail right on the head, because I don't remember in my ventures here that I've learned that, you know, 1% of the population serves in the Army or the military, and that's 1%. And as much as you think you understand, you really don't. I, sitting here going through everything that I've gone through, I don't have a full comprehension of what he went through, because I was not there. If you don't live it, I don't think you fully understand it. The VA, I don't think, is a place for this to be put, the burden put on. I feel like that while these soldiers are active, there should be some kind of mandatory program that they should have to go through. Especially the young ones. I mean, when you're 22 years old, I mean, think back to when you were 22. And I'm not, you know, by any means, you know, making light of the older people that have, you know, been deployed over and over again. But when you're 22 years old and all you've ever been is a soldier, and then you're put back into society and expected to be normal, it's not going to happen. You know, my son made the statement of it's easier for him to live in Afghanistan than it was for him to live in the United States. He wanted to go back. He could not cope with being here because all he knew was being a soldier. Somewhere in their training or debriefing or something, there needs to be something set up that they're forced to go through. If they're still government issue, they're still government property, they should be required to participate in some kind of program. I don't have the answers to what those would be, but I do know it should be more than throwing a pamphlet at them and saying, well, here, if you're feeling this way, you call this number. If you're feeling this way, call this number. And so, Heather, I'm glad you called, and you're just spot on with what's going on.
We now have on the line someone who knows Jacob very well, Jessica. Welcome to Central Standard. Jessica, tell us who you are.
I'm Jacob's older sister.
Tell us about your experience with Jacob's death and what you've gone through and what you've watched Lori Turner go through.
Well, the main thing that would stick out in my mind would be the phone call that day.
Tell us about it.
I remember my mom calling and asking if I had seen my brother or if he was with me. And I told her no. I haven't talked to him. I saw him earlier that day. And I haven't spoke to him since. She had told me that his lights were on in his room, the computer was up, everything was there except for his phone. She walked outside and she said, I remember saying, oh no. My response is, what? The rope is gone. What rope? The climbing rope. And then she said, he always said if he was going to do it, that's how he'd do it. And I told her she was stupid. And I told her she needed to go make some other phone calls to his friend. And then I got a phone call probably 20 minutes later from the neighbor, who was actually my friend, that told me I needed to get over there. And all I could hear were cops and my mom. And I remember going there and just hearing this horrendous screams that were coming out of my mother. And just thinking to myself, how come no one helped him? How many times did he have to say it for someone to listen to him? We were the only ones that would ever listen. But it only went that far. No one else would listen. I just don't understand how our soldiers can come back. And I've had a few more friends come back from war, and they're tore up. And some of them didn't even see half the stuff that Jake saw. But they still live with the nightmares and the pain and everything that he had to live with. And they're getting help, but it's taking time. I just don't understand how someone could say, go to the VA, they'll help you. Jake did that. They gave him a pill. They handed him a pamphlet and said, if you have a problem, call this. Or, you know, and the only person he could talk to was my mom. I had a few things that I know because he spoke to my fiance quite a bit. But Jake was never helped when he asked for it. The first time he tried to commit suicide, I think there should have been some kind of rehabilitation instead of putting him into the psych ward in New York and giving him pills and keeping him there for like a week. There should have been more done. He should have been helped from the get when that happened instead of just basically this should help and we'll just see what happens. Because that's exactly what happened. And then before we knew it, he was out of the army.
Lori Turner, these signs were obviously here. Tell us about the first time he tried to commit suicide while still serving.
Well, first off, I want to say, Jessica, I love you.
And thank you for your comments, Jessica. Yes.
I didn't even know about the first time until after Jake's death. In going through, when Bill Murphy came to town, he wanted to look through paperwork, and I'm normally very organized, which has seemed to kind of fall from the wayside, but I got Jake's VA records from here and the treatments he'd gotten, and which included his psychiatric visits. And in those visits, he had told his psychiatrist that he was actually in the hospital in New York because he'd attempted to hang himself. I knew he was in the hospital, but it was, I thought it was for alcohol is what he told me. So I didn't even know that he'd attempted suicide, and nobody contacted me. And, you know, my argument with that is if he was married, wouldn't his wife have known? So because he's a single soldier, he just got sent home, and I had no clue that he had actually attempted it. I then got the records from that particular hospital, and I know his chain of command was aware because there's record of them sitting in counseling sessions with him, and he was released to them. So I didn't learn about it till after his death, and it just haunts me that there were so many opportunities that he could have got help. And I don't know. I don't understand why. He tried to get into the Wounded Warrior program. And from the way he told me, the chain of command at that time wouldn't let him go. You know, they would, when the one person that was there that was trying to get him help and get him into that program would send the paperwork, they would claim that it got lost, rescind it, and then that would get lost. So then they started trying to get verbal authorization to send him to that program. And it never happened. There were so many missed opportunities.
Our guest is Lori Turner, whose son Jacob, a military serviceman, took his own life last year after a battle with post-traumatic stress disorder and other injuries related to his service in the military. You also heard from his sister Jessica by phone about her experience with Jacob's death. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, more on Jacob's legacy and Lori Turner's struggle to make sense of it all. Plus the story of a battalion officer, Lieutenant Colonel Andrew DeKeever, who got involved in Jacob's case, despite having never met him. Kansas City, if you've lost a loved one to military service or have a loved one battling PTSD, we'd like to hear from you, and we'd like to hear your stories too. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in and give your thoughts at centralstandard@kcur.org. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Both Specialist Jacob Andrews and Major Andrew DeKeever served in the same brigade in Afghanistan in 2009. Both putting themselves in harm's way, both serving their country faithfully. Both had psychological issues after their respective tours, but both of them did not survive those issues. Jacob Andrews hanged himself with a climbing rope in the woods near his childhood home last year, and his mother and his sister and his family members and his friends have been trying to make sense of the tragedy ever since. We're joined once again for the second half of this hour by Lori Turner, the mother of Jacob Andrews. As we get deeper into Lori's and Jacob's story, Kansas City, what are your concerns about this generation of military vets? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your thoughts to centralstandard@kcur.org. Lori Turner, tell us about then-Major, now-Lieutenant Colonel Andrew DeKeever and how he helped get recognition for your son, Jake.
Well, it was the way all this stuff can happen a world away, and then you're so close to home. He ended up being in Fort Leavenworth, and through the story that was done in Stars and Stripes, we met. He worked in mortuary affairs, and he actually processed the body of the young man that Bill Murphy was originally doing the story about. He too came back with issues. He's fortunate enough that he did get help and get the help he needed. And I'm so grateful for that, because otherwise he wouldn't be here to lift me up sometimes. We met, we met to dinner, and they've been to the house and everything. So we become friends, where he's my friend now. He has pushed all the paperwork through to get that combat infantry badge, because he knew what it meant to me, because I knew what it meant to Jake. And I never would have known, where to start to get that paperwork through. We had to get sworn statements from other soldiers to prove that Jake had been actually in combat, which is ridiculous, because I know, 10 to 20 actual firefights he was in. And I had no way of proving that, but just from talking to other soldiers that he served with. And we got a few sworn statements from Kyle Uten and Johnny Rao. And so that was able to get us the combat infantry badge. He's in Alaska now, so he's further away. But we text or speak almost daily. He's not stopped. I mean, the minute he got the combat infantry badge pushed through, he's onto the Purple Heart. I mean, he's still going on it. And I think and I hope that it is healing for him to do this, because it's very selfless thing that he's done. He also, his family has, they showered Ashley with gift cards, for the baby. He had a story published, and he donated royalties to that, which I purchased the baby gear and furniture, with. And, and it's not just him as well. His wife and his child have had to, have to give up a little more time with him so that he could do the work that he needs to do to help get this stuff put through. So I don't think he is not enough to say to him, and I could say it every day for the rest of my life, and it's still, gonna feel empty compared to what he's done for our family.
You're listening to Central Standard. If you're just joining us on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Lori Turner, whose son Jacob, a military veteran, took his own life last year after returning home from war. We've been hearing about the story of Jacob Andrews and the story of Lori Turner, who's been forwarding the cause of Jacob after his death. We were hearing just now about Lieutenant Colonel Andrew DeKeever and how he helped get recognition for Jacob Andrews posthumously. Lori, it was after the Army sent Lieutenant Colonel DeKeever to the Advanced Military School at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and he prepared to take command of his own battalion, the one that he now commands in Alaska, that he read about Jacob in that Stars and Stripes article. What were your thoughts when he first got in touch with you, Lieutenant Colonel DeKeever?
I mean, unfortunately, the way society is these days, you have to be leery. And I certainly was, at first. Our first meeting, I made sure my husband was with me, because you don't know who you're meeting.
At an Olive Garden.
Yes, we met at Olive Garden, we missed each other. We were standing right there and didn't know each other. So, it's kind of funny. And our first meeting was a little, of course, it was still very raw for me. And he's dealing with his issues, too. And doing this brings up a lot of different things for him as well. Safety, was an issue at first. I feel very comfortable with him. Ashley and him and I never met, and she came to stay with us for like 5 weeks. And we drove to Iowa to meet him so that they could meet face to face. And had some lunch, and we went and saw a couple of the bridges of Madison County. So, just doing silly things like that. So we became friends, and I feel like not only do I have a new family in New York with Ashley and her family, I have family in Alaska, and You know, I feel a sense of a global community, a global family, because for this stuff to have happened, you know, a world away from me, someplace I'll never go, someplace I'll never see, and for our paths to cross the way they have, you know, I have to believe it's divine intervention.
Interestingly enough, his wife ended up going to the same high school as Andrew's girlfriend, Ashley, in New York. So that's a connection right there.
Yeah. And we actually, on my last visit, when I went for the baby to be born, after the baby was born, her family has an antique basket store up there. And we went and met her mother. And it was really nice. And
did the Lieutenant Colonel Andrew DeKeever give you a sense of what it was really like over there in Afghanistan from an officer standpoint, from the standpoint of someone who worked in mortuary services, other than what Jake had told you?
Well,
did he give you a sense as well?
Well, absolutely. I've actually read, so I have a manuscript that's dedicated to my son, which has not published yet. So I've certainly read that. Gruesome is the only way I know to explain what this man has been through. But he's also the kind of leader that he didn't just sit behind a desk and leave, you know, enlisted to deal with it. He went in and actually dealt with it on a daily basis too. You know, and then he would try to, from my understanding, you know, express something to his chain of command, and, you know, they kind of just turned a blind eye to him, and they didn't understand why he actually went into the tent and helped out, you know. This man is, I mean, he may not have been out, you know, kicking doors in and pounding the ground, but he serves his country in a way that a lot of us couldn't even fathom.
Kansas City, what are your concerns about this generation of military vets? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your thoughts at centralstandard@kcur.org. We've been talking with Lori Turner, whose son, Jacob Andrews, a military serviceman, committed suicide last year after returning home from war. And we've been hearing that story, plus the story of a Lieutenant Colonel Andrew DeKeever, who had never met Jake, but got involved in getting his posthumous war service commendations secured, and there's still more work to be done, as we will find out soon. Phil in Overland Park, welcome to Central Standard. Phil, are you on the line?
Yes.
Welcome
yes,
to Central Standard. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. How about yourself?
Very good.
I would like to give my condolences to Mrs. Turner, a Gold Star mother, for her loss.
Thank you.
Now, you're you're a 30-year vet, right? You're a 30-year military veteran. Tell us about being a veteran. Tell us about being a veteran, Phil.
Well, being a veteran is the country want to use you to keep the freedoms and rights that they have. And then when you come back, they don't want to help you adjust being a veteran. But everyone wants those freedoms. And the biggest thing is with the young generation now, if the young soldier go to their chain of command and tell them that they have their own problem, the chain of command say they are malingering or they are being a wimp. They would stand up and be a man, be hooah-hooah. But want to really take a look at what 10 years of war has done to the young generation with back-to-back services in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Thank you, Phil, for your comments. We've been at war for a combined 20 years now. Most of this generation, all they know, this generation of vets, all they know is war. Some have served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Talk about that, Lori Turner, this sort of silent, a few good men, code red mentality, where if you speak up about your psychological issues, maybe you're ostracized.
Absolutely. You're flagged, you're put on profile, you know, you're separated from, you know, the rest of your company. You're not allowed to go. I know he wasn't allowed to go out on, you know, out in the field and different things. So, you know, he actually used the term with me that he felt like he was just sitting in his barracks and rotting. Because, you know, of course he came back with issues and the drinking, you know, which I think most of us know is a way to cope, is self-medicating, you know. And yes, he did get DUIs, and I am in no way condoning the fact that, you know, that was correct. But it was a sign of something bigger. My son didn't have a drinking problem before. So, you know, something happened in that, you know, 1 year window that, flipped that switch. And, I don't know. I just don't know what I wish I had just one answer for things. It would make my life so much easier, but I'm searching every day for the answers, not only just for me, but for those out there, for the other Jacobs, you know, you know, are going to face these same problems. And I was allowed to just say a few words, you know, when I received his combat infantry badge, and I wanted to make it clear, you know. And I think in some of the aspects, people might think I'm bashing the Army or the military, but that is not what I'm saying. I'm patriotic. I'm an American. I'm pro-troop. The system's not working. It needs to be fixed. I don't know what those answers are. I would be glad to sit on any board, you know, to try to figure out what those are, and share my experience. But there's not just one answer to the question. It's so dimensional that there's just, I don't know what the one answer would be.
It's a question this country will have to address as the vets come home, and many of the families of the vets and people in political circles, journalists, that we all have to confront.
Lori, law enforcement,
everybody.
Yeah.
Lori, when little Jake is old enough to hear about his father's time in the military and finally discuss why his father's no longer here, what do you plan on telling?
Well, Ash and I actually were sitting on her porch the other day talking about this, and you know, this is going to be a conversation that's going to be ongoing. You certainly have to be age appropriate, you know, for comprehension. You know, there will be a day that, and especially with technology, he can look things up on the computer. So how do you tell him the truth without giving him the gory details? And and you don't want him to find out, you know, through technology. And so it's going to be a conversation that's just going to continue to change at different levels of age. But, you know, I want the legacy of my son to be how he lived and not how he died. He was much more than how he died. He was much more than what's printed on a piece of paper. He's much more than what I'm sitting here talking about today. There's just more to that. And by Jacob being given his badge and, you know, potentially the Purple Heart, that shows that his daddy made a difference in this world. He made a difference anyway, but it backs it up. Even without the, you know, without the awards, the badges, the uniform, you know, the horse and pony shows, he made a difference. He made a difference in my life. He made a difference in his sister's life. He made a difference in his stepdad's life. He made a difference in his nieces and nephews. I mean, this affects more than just one person. And ultimately, it leaves the family to deal with the PTSD demons that they were trying to escape. So before we get off here, I just want to say to people, you have to get help. You have to stand up for yourself. If you don't stand up for yourself, nobody else is going to. So if you're a young man or woman out there and you're having these issues, speak up. There is no shame in it. Don't leave your family with the same demons you're fighting, because it affects from the 84-year-old grandmother all the way down to the child that was not even born yet. It's and it affects friends and family. It affects the global community. Reach out for help. It's there. And if you don't get the help where you go to, then you go somewhere else. You stand up for yourself. If you don't do it, nobody else has gone to. If I could have stood up for Jake when he was alive, the way I am now, maybe this never would have happened. But I didn't want to make him mad. And Jake, he's up there in heaven right now, and he's probably going, oh my gosh, Mom. You know, he was never one for attention. So, but I have to do this for his son.
Our guest is Lori Turner, whose son, Jacob Andrews, a military service veteran, took his own life last year after he returned from a life at war and found it hard to cope back in the States. But his memory lives on through those who loved him, including Lori Turner and his sister Jessica, who we've learned from today, and his son Jake, who will celebrate his first birthday next month in October. Thank you so much, Lori Turner, for sharing your story with us once again. And you can hear last year's broadcast and catch today's broadcast, as well as photos of Jacob Andrews, on our website at kcur.org. Thank you so much for coming, Lori.
Thank you for having me again.
And tune in tomorrow as we take a look at adult literacy in KC, plus a look at legal issues facing musicians today. Our show is produced by Tamika Weatherspoon with help from Andreas Lindsay, who is going on tour with rapper Pitbull, performing under the nickname DJ Candlewax. Way to go, DJ Candlewax. Update is next with a talk with the Texperts. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.